This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
This is a Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark. Four tumultuous years under President Donald Trump culminated in his loss at the polls last November, but now we're faced with new questions over what President Biden will be like once he's sworn in later today. What will his presidency mean, particularly for the Asian region? And to help us answer that, I have with me this morning Elina Nora, Director, Political Security Affairs of the Asia Society Policy Institute, and Jayant Menon, Visiting Senior Fellow at the IC's Yusuf Ishak Institute. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today.
Hi, Elena. Hi, Lynn.
Thank you, Lynn. Good to be here.
And so the president-elect ran on a platform of a return to decency. I mean, how much of a return to a previous style of American diplomacy can we expect with him in the White House? Elina, perhaps you'd like to take this first.
Sure, yeah. I think that's exactly right. There will be a return to a less crass style of diplomacy that we've perhaps become inured to over the past 4 years under President Trump. And we've seen this in multiple statements, both from Biden himself, but also from his potential cabinet members, including Jake Sullivan and Tony Blinken. So there are promises of a return to multilateralism, to institutionalism, and to reaching out to friends, partners, and allies in a way that won't put transactionalism front and center, but instead the focus will be on cooperation and collaboration to achieve common goals and obviously from the US's perspective, American interests. I think we'll also see some of the Trump administration rules and executive orders undone and overturned on the very first day of President Biden's taking of office, particularly in the areas of climate change, the economy. But I think for us, further away from the U.S., on what has been termed within the U.S. as racial justice, but in particular, the executive order that has banned certain members of Muslim majority countries from entering the U.S., I think we'll see that being overturned on the very first day of Biden's term.
And Jayant, what are the kinds of things that you're going to be expecting as we head into this new presidency?
I think Elina has covered it very well. I think all of those things are things that we're going to look forward to after four tumultuous years under Trump. So, you know, basically a return to normalcy without the kind of day-to-day uncertainty that we've experienced for the last 4 years. I think you find that Biden's view of the world isn't one where, you know, it's a zero-sum game type of approach where, you know, America can only rise by pulling other countries down. I think that's what put America first, or Trump's approach was really all about. I mean, he didn't understand that you can all gain and prosper together, but rather one had to gain at the expense of the other. I think that will change, and that will be a welcome change. And as Elina said, I think we'll see a lot more engagement in a sort of sensible and decent way with the rest of the world. Embracing multilateralism, but also embracing a rules-based order in terms of economic and non-economic issues. So all these things, I think, will change and very quickly, and it's something I'm certainly looking forward to.
So how big of a role do you both anticipate that Asia is going to play in Biden's presidency moving forward? I mean, will we see a pivot to Asia as we saw under the Obama administration, even without the economic pillar of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, since Donald Trump decided to pull out of that at the start of his presidency? Jayant, what do you think of this?
I think for quite a while, President Biden will be focused on domestic issues. He'll be almost completely obsessed with dealing with a number of domestic problems that are, you know, critical at this stage. And this, of course, starts with the pandemic and extends across, you know, across the board. So we won't see much difference for a while, I think, but he was part of the Obama administration, as you mentioned, that tried to engage with Asia through the TPP. I think, you know, the CPTPP, which is the new version of it, is a very different agreement from the original one. All the bits that America wanted in there that would have, you know, worked in its favor have been pretty much dismantled. So I don't see, you know, a rush to return via that route or any kind of economic route. I think he'll look to engage more with the rest of the world and Asia using other means, perhaps the security angle or climate. That might be the way in which it comes back. In security, of course, there's the ASEAN Plus 8 forum or the East Asia forum that is already there that he can pick up off the table. And of course, there's many other ways to engage when it comes to climate change. But I don't think any economic item will be available for quite some time. So once he gets past dealing with domestic issues, he'll find something else to engage with when it comes to Asia.
So, Alina, what do you think of this as well? I mean, there are several strategic issues here in the Asian region, which the U.S. under Obama, when President-elect Biden was vice president, was much more heavily involved in. So, for example, the South China Sea, as compared to the Trump presidency. What do you anticipate is the future for those sort of issues moving forward?
Yeah, I think there are several issues to unpack here, and I think Jayant is absolutely right. There will be a predominant focus on domestic issues, especially in the first year of the Biden administration, just because there are so many pressing issues like the economy, like the pandemic, which hasn't really gotten any better in the U.S. And so I think a lot of the administration's time and resources will be taken up by those issues. But I think there will also be a deliberate effort to focus on some of these weaknesses at home. And we've seen this being said, for example, by Jake Sullivan, the incoming national security advisor to the Biden administration, who has said that in order for the U.S. to be effective and a successful leader at the global stage, the U.S. will have to get its own house in order. So I think there will be this deliberate focus on issues related to racial justice, the economy at home in the U.S. But at the same time, what we've also seen is the appointment of Kurt Campbell, who was instrumental in the Obama administration's pivot or rebalance. Kurt Campbell will be the Indo-Pacific coordinator at the National Security Council. And so I think this is a signal to Asia that America will be paying closer attention to Asia, not just because of China, which has been the criticism of the U.S.'s approach within Asia, but an indication that the U.S. is prepared to engage with Asia for Asia's sake.
Yes, I mean, the Trump administration has been remarkably hands-off for these 4 years that they've been in power, even despite the Indo-Pacific strategy that's been put in place. But speaking of that, you know, that Indo-Pacific strategy, the recent publication of it was a bit of a break with tradition. And some say that it's a means of pressuring Joe Biden to continue Trump's measures in this region. So do you think that this is going to affect Biden's strategic direction in any way?
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. There have been a number of, within the foreign policy sphere, there have been a number of bombs, you know, metaphorically speaking, that have been thrown in the way of the Biden administration that will no doubt complicate U.S. relations with not only parts of Asia, such as U.S.-China, U.S.-Taiwan relations, But also the recent sanctioning of Cuba and certain entities abroad as terrorist groups, all these landmines that the Biden administration will somehow have to either detonate or defuse in the first 6 months of its administration are going to be particularly challenging, and it'll take up a lot of the administration's time just trying to repair some of these relationships that have unfortunately been just tossed aside in the final waning hours of the Trump administration. So no doubt there will be serious challenges for the administration on the foreign policy front.
I'm speaking with Alina Noor, Director of Political Security Affairs at the Asia Society Policy Institute, and Jayant Menon, Visiting Senior Fellow of the IC's Yusuf Ishak Institute. Up next, a closer look at how Malaysia plays into US future interests in this region. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Alina Noor, Director of Political Security Affairs at the Asia Society Policy Institute, and Jayant Menon, Visiting Senior Fellow at the IC's Yusuf Ishak Institute. Now, Jayant, Alina was talking a bit about the figure of China, which has featured so prominently in the Trump administration's dealings with this region. Economically, what is your gauge of whether or not the U.S. has managed to curb China's influence in this arena, and whether or not they will continue to be able to do so going forward?
I think to answer the first part of your question, I don't think the trade war has worked to curb China's influence in the way that the US had hoped it would. I think what we've seen is that China's been penalized, and so has the US. They're both lost dearly by engaging in this trade war. China's had, you know, retaliatory tariffs on U.S. trade as well. There have been some winners in the ASEAN region as a result of the relocation of investment out of China that we've seen, and Malaysia is one such beneficiary. This hasn't worked in the way that the Trump administration had hoped for, and maybe Biden will take a much more inclusive approach in getting allies, more allies involved. But the approach that the Trump administration has taken hasn't worked to serve any of those objectives. In the end, I think you'll find that, you know, we've moved too far down this road. I mean, the Biden administration won't be able to suddenly engage positively with China. That ship has sailed, but it won't be the same instruments, and it'll be a much more inclusive approach involving more countries, hopefully, than the one-on-one battle that we've seen.
And now just also zooming in a little bit on Malaysia. I mean, how would you both have categorized Malaysia's position both economically and from a foreign policy standpoint under Donald Trump? And what do you think about it will change as we head into this Biden presidency? Alina, perhaps you'd like to take this first?
It's been a little tough to assess because for a couple of reasons. One, as I mentioned, the Trump administration has almost entirely focused its Asia approach on China. Mm-hmm. And so whenever we've had visits in Malaysia or in the region in Southeast Asia from US officials, the messaging has always been about China. And so I think the sense is that in the past few years, the US has not cared for Southeast Asia as much for the region's sake, or even for, in the case of Malaysia, for the country's sake, more so than to convey its attitude and sentiments about China to the region and to try to get Malaysia and the rest of the region on board the US train vis-a-vis China. Secondly, of course, we all know our country has been roiled politically over the last few years. And so there has been a bit of an inward turn. And so we haven't been engaging as actively as we normally would have. And this has, of course, been compounded by COVID. So I think this combination of factors has just tempered US-Malaysia relations. But at the working level, I believe that the relationship is still strong and there are strong fundamentals underpinning the relationship. It's just that we have a, although the US and Malaysia have a comprehensive partnership that was in place in 2014, I believe, under President Obama, that partnership has never really been put into use fully under the Trump administration.
Do you anticipate any flashpoints should the US become more involved once again in not just Malaysia, but kind of the Southeast Asian region?
One area to watch is this focus on democracy that the Biden administration has promised to emphasize. And of course, you know, we can all say we're democracy enthusiasts, but I think the examples of democracy and a rules-based order as preached, particularly in the last few years, have been a little suspect as to what democracy and a rules-based order means. And we've heard from Biden himself that there is an intention from the administration to convene a summit of democracies in the first year of his presidency. Now, I think, you know, this might be alienating to some of us in Southeast Asia that don't have such a hang up on the ideals of democracy. And as you know, we in ASEAN, we don't really have, we don't really prioritize political ideology as a criterion for cooperation in the region. And so I think this this primacy on democracy, depending on how it plays out in style and substance, may end up alienating some, particularly if it comes across as a little too preachy and hectoring in tone.
All right. And Jayant, what do you have to say to this as well? I mean, how do you anticipate that Malaysia's economic position vis-a-vis the US will change under this Biden administration, zooming in on our country in particular?
I think we haven't seen much negative impacts from the Trump administration as far as economic relations are concerned. In fact, there was very strong ties between Najib and Trump, if you recall. And the change in government didn't produce any, a change of government in Malaysia didn't, you know, produce any difficulties with the US either. So, you know, Malaysia has steered clear of picking sides in this trade war. And the US continues to be a very important source of investment and an important trading partner. So that has continued and I think will continue under Biden. So we won't notice much change, I think, for a while. And I think we should remember that, you know, Biden is not your, you know, raving free trader either. You know, he's, especially now with both houses, with the Democrats, I don't think we're going to see, you know, a lot of policy changes on the trade front from the U.S. side. And he does have his made in all of the U.S. or made in all of America policy as well. So this is just, you know, reshoring or protectionism, you know, under different names. So in that sense, again, there's not that much change, I think, from what we've seen under the Trump administration. So we probably won't even notice much of a difference on the purely economic or trade and investment side. Anything that happens will probably happen, as Alina said, indirectly through the change in the focus on China alone that we've seen, you know, with the Trump administration. It'll be a bit of a broadening, but not in any, in a major way. So it's not going to have major impacts on Malaysia.
But considering that Malaysia, I mean, as with many countries in this region, does seem to have shifted to align more strongly with China economically over these past couple of years in the vacuum left by the US, will this become a problem going forward, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not too sure that Malaysia has really realigned itself very closely with China. I think the Pakatan Harapan government had its difficulties with some projects. And I think, you know, there wasn't a clear sort of shift because I feel that issues in the rest of the world will not feature prominently with the Biden administration for quite some time, I don't think this is going to be a problem. They're not going to turn and say, oh, hang on, you know, Malaysia is a country that has lined up more with China than us, sort of thing, when you know, when he finally decides to engage with the region. Malaysia has a long-standing, strong relationship with the U.S., in fact, longer and stronger than China, I would say.
Sorry, I just have a really short point, mm-hmm. if I may. The world has changed very much over the past 4 years. I think we often, when we talk about U.S. policy towards the region, we tend to focus on the U.S. side of the equation. But it's important to also remember that a lot of the world has sort of moved on over the last 4 years because of the turbulence in U.S. foreign policy. And so countries have regained their agency, particularly in Southeast Asia. And I would argue that in some ways there's less of a dependency or a tendency to focus on U.S. leadership because we've seen where that leadership has broken down. And so I think countries have come to the realization that that they have their own stake and interest in many issues that cut across borders, such as global health, global public health. And over the past 4 years, if anything has emerged from this turbulence, it's that smaller countries, such as ours in the region, have come to realize that we ourselves have our own agency. And I think this is an important point for us to develop, even with the Biden administration now taking office in Washington.
Yeah, as Alida was saying, one of the things that we've also witnessed in the last 4 years in terms of how things have changed is, again, you know, the weakening a lot of multilateral institutions. By design, right? This is what the Trump administration had, you know, purposefully implemented, I think. And from the trade point of view, we've seen a weakening of a rules-based trading system overseen by the WTO. The dispute settlement mechanism is in paralysis now because the U.S. has stopped appointing judges to the appellate body, and so they don't have a quorum, and so they can't hear cases. And this mechanism, dispute settlement mechanism, has been, you know, very valuable, especially to the small countries of the world. This is the great equalizer, and that's what we need to have return to the world when we see the end of this administration and the start of the Biden administration. Those are the sorts of things, these sorts of multilateral institutions that even up the playing field for small countries, give them a seat at the table, an equal seat, and hopefully that will bring back much more order to a trading system that's slightly chaotic right now.
Thank you very much, the both of you, for speaking with us this morning. It's been a pleasure having you both on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lynn.
I've been speaking with Alina Nora, a director of political security affairs at the Asia Society Policy Institute, as well as Jayant Menon, visiting senior fellow at the IC's Yusuf Ishak Institute. This has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile. Unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.